got a problem here, and it's more than just Alvin streaming Punisher. When life begins to suck, who's reporting it? Luckily, got two friends who you won't forget. Coming live, Alvin and friend on survival. Laughing nonstop, case drops on a cycle. Louder than intrusive thoughts off an iPhone. How they make the world seem bright with the lights off? AFs, it might as well stay up. Lies being told like that dinosaur BS. Magnifying glass to the ground if they don't see us. Having the time, roasting your favorite pizza. Bougie ain't an option, it's the way. Take it to the grave, add moving to the place. You already know when they take the case. Laugh the pain away, it's affirmative murder.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I'm Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner in true crime, Francel Evans.
Oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, man, I'm the mailman, can't you tell, man? Gonna post it.
What up?
Hey, man, it is a somber day. I know you heard the news.
It is?
Well, man. Uncle Joe's trying to get TikTok up out of here, bro. We are sitting on the precipice of TikTok apocalypse. The TikTokalypse.
Joe B?
Joe B, the Senate, whoever you want to blame. This is a coup. I find it pretty gross, like the real reason behind what they're doing. But the front is an interesting angle. I understand, like, the toxicness of TikTok. But they're trying to force China to sell their stake in the company because they don't like China having influence over the U.S. So that's very mobbish and gangsterish. I don't really like that, but I don't want to talk about that because that's too serious. That's boring. Fran, I want to give a shout out to a guy on TikTok named Drew Freed, DrooFreed. This dude goes around roasting mailboxes. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's my favorite TikTok right now. And so I want to give him a shout out. He's always just like, oh, man, you call yourself a mailbox? Well, more like a dirt box, you piece of shit. And he just walks away from the mailbox. He's just roasting mailboxes. Like, oh, yeah, what's that? What are you, a mailbox or dump trucks? Piece of shit. And he just walks away from the mailbox. It is the funniest thing. And that's just the kind of high intellect comedy that we're going to miss if the TikTokalypse happens. Fran, what is one of your favorite accounts or one of your favorite TikToks that you like to watch on repeat?
It's this guy called, his name on TikTok is Baldhead Cam. So what he do is he gets on this site. It used to be called, Russian Roulette, I think it used to be called. But it's something else now. I don't know what it's called. Mm-hmm. So it's like you hop on and you get on video cam with like some random person and then you can just change it.
Sure, yeah. Chat roulette.
So what he do, is he'll get on. So when he get to the next person, he has a camera set up in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person will go like, and then when he sees somebody's on, he'll switch the camera, and then he'll be on. And the person goes like, "What the? Why do you have a camera in the hallway?" He goes, "What?" And then he hits the button again, and he has a camera up on the ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, "Huh? This one?" And they go like, "No." And then he'll go like, "Hmm." And then he hit a button again, and he'll look behind him, and it's a camera like, it's another camera there. And then they'll go. And they would go, not that one. And he would like, make this weird face and go like, what, this one? And then he has one outside, like looking into his room. I'd be dying laughing. And people just be like, why do you have so many cameras set? It's so funny, bro. Dying laughing.
This is the kind of, yeah,
you got to check it out.
This is the kind of highbrow comedy that we just cannot. We cannot let the United States government, this empire, rob the people of what we want. Nobody wants TikTok on. Nobody cares. Every app that you open up is taking your data.
I don't know about that.
Oh,
I don't
know if I agree. What, you disagree? You think it should be banned? You're willing to give them the bald head cam content?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's your reasoning behind that?
I think, my honest opinion, man, I think it's just, people take too much, look, because you can get caught up on TikTok.
That's a fact.
Swiping through, and then next thing you know, it's like, damn, it's been an hour.
That's a
and
fact,
half.
Jack.
It's been an hour and a half. And I just did absolutely nothing. I didn't learn nothing. I just sat here and giggled. Laughed off some TikToks or seeing 50 people, 20 people do the same damn dance all up and down my TL.
That's true. I did a full like turnaround on TikTok because when it first came out, I was like, I don't give a shit. Why are people doing these shitty cheerleading dances? I don't care. But then you find your subgenre, your lane of TikTok, your world in it.
Yes.
And when you're at this point, if that's the TikTok that you like, you're a loser. I'm sorry. Like, I mean, God bless you and everything. But TikTok has so many more entertaining aspects to it than doing like the Renegade or whatever, that if you're still like, that's what you like partake in when you get on TikTok and you're not 12 or 8 years old, if you're an adult and you mostly watch dance content on TikTok, get out of my face.
So, okay, so what is your TL look like? What is?
Oh, man, some stuff I can't even get into. Just like odd people living their life, that the videos get like 100 views. Just, you know, a lot of like dry comedy. Like I said, this guy that roasts mailboxes, he's hilarious. Just stuff like that. It's a lot of people doing really brilliant things on TikTok. Like, it's a lot of food stuff, like a lot of food reviews. There's a YouTube channel that I feel like paying for, but I feel like they're gonna force my hand to eventually do it. But they have a TikTok. It's a show called Very Important People. They have a TikTok, and so I get to see the clips of the show on TikTok. But their YouTube videos are behind a paywall on YouTube, and I'm just like, I have YouTube Premium. I'm not gonna also pay like the YouTube Patreon. I'm already paying for YouTube Premium, but they also get to put stuff behind a paywall, which I'm like, I don't know. But the show is so funny that they're making me think about it, but I get to see clips.
What is it called?
It's called Very Important People. Basically, oh man, I could talk about this show all day. So there's this woman on the show. She's so funny. It's a dry show. It's like Barbara Walters. It's like a sit-down interview show. And she has a comedian come on, and they put a bunch of prosthetics on them before they come out on the show, and then they make up a character in the back. So they'll make them dress you up. They'll dress you up like an alien. And then you come up with a whole script in your head and you improv, and then you come out and she interviews you. She's like, well, so what's it like being an alien? And then you just start improving your character to her. And sometimes they break, and it's so funny. It's like such a funny, it reminds me of like Eric Andre, or it's one of those kind of things. It's like a very funny, dry, off the cuff, improv-y kind of show. But I get to see the clips of it on TikTok. That's another thing about TikTok. You get to see so many clips of things from movies that came out 10 years ago, and you're like, wait, this movie looks good. I just watched 5 scenes from it. I'm going to watch the whole movie. Yeah. So it's a lot of that kind of stuff. But a lot of stuff I can't even really describe why some of the stuff on my TikTok that I watch is funny. It just is funny to me. Yeah, it's that kind of, but that's the kind of stuff that's what TikTok is valuable for to me, not dancing. Some stuff I got so many people like motivational speakers on my TikTok that are awful at being motivational speakers and get no views. But I find it funny that they think they can motivate people. So it's like, man, rise and grind, bro. Today is the day to be you. Like, a new day, new you, and you just keep going for it and strive. And they're sitting in their car. And that kind of stuff is funny to me. So, and that's hard to explain why it's funny, but it just is. But the point is, man, let me get my...
Was that you or me? You hear that noise?
I hear nothing. I don't hear anything. You good?
No, I mean, like, it was like that. Was that me?
I don't hear anything.
Did you hear that? Okay, no. Maybe it won't pick that up. All right. No.
I'm going to go ahead and get my score going before I continue, but as we sit here looking at a potential TikTok ellipse, all I can say is one love and thank you to TikTok, to China, to whoever's responsible for this amazing app. I've had great laughs. I've cried. Soldier coming home videos that people have ripped off YouTube and put them on TikTok in clip form. I've been disgusted a lot of times. A lot of gross things sneak on TikTok before they get blocked. Heard a lot of dumb think pieces from people about things that don't need to be thought that deep about. Plenty of those. So there has a downside. Unqualified internet therapists and psychologists who don't have a degree in anything giving people advice, and then people listening to it. That's another thing. TikTok's just a very interesting place. It is a cesspool, and I will admit that, but it's our cesspool. It's the world's cesspool, and you don't get to just take it away from us. Fran, your final thoughts as we look at the possibility of never seeing TikTok again?
I don't give a shit. TikTok can go.
Wow.
Fuck off.
Oof. Okay. That was very beautiful and well said. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some fucked up shit. So stick around.
Affirmative Murder is brought to you by My Life in a Book. With Mother's Day right around the corner, I just know you guys are thinking about a truly special gift for your mom. But let me tell you about a pretty priceless gift. MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book that you could pass down from generation to generation, which I think is a pretty awesome memento to leave behind. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. Your mother or the mother can either type her response or record her voice. Mylifeinabook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It would be like preserving her voice and her stories for all of eternity. Your mom's giving you a lifetime of stories, and this is your chance to give her a way to share them. I'm in the middle of my mylifeinabook.com journey, and I'm really excited to see how it turns out. I've been asking some pretty thought-provoking and funny questions, and, you know, I'm excited to see the response, but I'm also just excited to have the physical book in my hands and know that I can look back on it in 20, 30 years. The interface is super user-friendly. The questions are super easy to set up. It's a breeze of a process. So what I need you to do is check out mylifeinabook.com. That's mylifeinabook.com. And use code AMP, that's A, M as in Mother's Day, P, at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for the mom in your life this Mother's Day. One more time, that's mylifeinabook.com. Use code AMP for 10% off today.
All right, and we are back. Folks, before we dive into this week's affirmative murder, I just want to announce one more time. Last week, I believe I did so, but we were doing and are doing a ticket giveaway to our show in Portland, which is like 9 days away. 9 days away, give or take. I don't know when this is coming out in relation to what I just said, but we're giving away two tickets because two of our awesome listeners, one from across the pond, and I think another one from somewhere else, maybe that's a flight away or far away, bought tickets, aren't able to go to the show, but wanted to offer up in support of the show, buy a ticket to the live show, and then advise us to give it away to a listener or two. We're giving away a pair of tickets. The information about the giveaway is on Instagram right now, and I will announce the winner soon. And you will win a pair of tickets to come to our Portland show on us. And we're excited to see you there. We have less than 10 tickets left. There's less than 10 tickets left. Now, a sold-out show would be awesome. Not pressed about it. Super happy about the turnout and how many tickets have been sold. But I just want to let people know we're getting down to its last minute. If you're thinking of going, act on it now because there are not many tickets left. So that's my only advice. If we don't sell any more tickets, I'm fine with that as well because it's going to be a good turnout. I don't want to get into that because I don't want Fran's butthole to clench up at the nerves about it. But very excited. That's all I wanted to say. Live show, Affirmative Murder in Portland. Super excited. May 4th. Yeah. Ticket giveaway. Two tickets. If you want to participate in the contest and you're listening to this before it's over, which will be Friday the 26th, I think Friday's the 26th of April. If you're listening to this and it's not April 26th yet, you still have a chance. So, yeah, get online, get on our Instagram, check it out, participate, get your hat, throw your hat in the ring, and we'd love to see you in Portland. Fran, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, this week our affirmative murder is gruesome. This guy raked up a lot of victims, a high volume of victims over a long period of time, which is very sad. I guess not long. I've seen stories of longer, but he was able to get away with this for a long time, mostly because the bulk of his victims were people of color, young boys and men of color specifically. But
I was actually surprised he's a white guy.
Yes, he is a white man.
He's a white man.
And this week, our affirmative murder is the story of Ronald Dominique. So that last name is kind of urban sounding. If it was his first name, I'd really be surprised if he was a white guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's what threw off. Because our notes, he goes by Dominique. He's like, it's Dominique in our notes.
Oh, yeah, right. So you keep reading Dominique did this and Dominique did that. Yeah, yeah.
So in my brain, I go, this is a black person. And I go like, wait, what? White?
That's a good point. Yes, that is true. That is how the notes are formulated. So yeah, that might throw some people off. You just keep saying Dominique over and over again, and then you see a picture of him. He looks like he's in the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band or something. So Ronald Dominique was born on January 9th, 1964, in Thibodaux, Louisiana. He was the youngest of six children. So damn. It's a lot of procreation on that end of the parents there. And his parents were lower class laborers who lived in a trailer park in a rural area in Louisiana. Mm. So those the back by you, Louise. That's the see. That's the Louisiana. When I see it on TV, I go. That's why I never want to go to New Orleans. But everybody tells me I would love New Orleans because the food looks good and everything. But when I hear backwoods and trailer park of Louisiana, I'm thinking swamps and I'm thinking of voodoo and
alligators
and cemeteries and the people doing all kind of stuff to bring the bodies back to life. And I understand that there's some racial connotations to voodoo.
I'm about to say, is that racist?
Yeah, I don't know. I've had conversations with people about what voodoo is and how it's actually a good thing and all the, or it's like not a good or bad thing or whatever. But I just feel like, I don't know, when I think of New Orleans, those are the first things that come to mind. And I don't like spooky. I'm not a spooky guy. And I feel like everything around New Orleans, aside from how good the food is like faces painted skulls and people wearing top hats and walking through cemeteries. And I don't know. I'm apprehensive about it. Not knocking it, but I'm just like, I don't know if that's a vibe for me. I feel like it will give me like the heebies. Does that sound fun to you?
I like that. I respect that. I feel like that's how it should be.
Yeah. Are you turning me on? Are you turning me fully around on what I just said?
A celebration. Yeah. I think life should be a celebration.
Yeah.
Funerals shouldn't be what they are. Let's not get off topic here, but.
Well, I told you I want to be a tree. I've told everyone around me I want to be a tree. So my funeral won't be that.
Who has say so in that? Who has say so in
that? My spouse and
who has,
you know, and you. I would hope that you would follow through with my wishes and make sure that I'm a tree.
I don't know about that. But you know what?
Put him in one of these cemeteries where there's no bodies in there. Make him be the only one in there by himself.
Put him in the cemetery, and then we'll come back, check him, see if he's still here.
He'll be my experiment to really see if this whole
donate your body to the Francois experiment that nobody exists.
I'm gonna go check on therapy. This guy every 5 years and I'm gonna dig him up, and one day he won't be there, and I'll be proven right, and then I'll laugh at him when I'm proven right.
Stupid. See,
I told you. You're not in the graveyard. How about that? How about that for poetic justice? You're not in the graveyard. So anyway, Dominique, here we go. Ronald also, he sang in the school choir and was a big fan of Patti LaBelle. You know, Patti. Kick her shoes off. Yeah. Man, Patti could, man. Remember Patti Pies?
I was about to say that.
She should have paid that boy, though.
Who?
You know, the pies were really only sold because some dude ate the pie on the video and the video went viral.
No.
And then she tried to be like, the pies only sold because they didn't sell because of that. And it was like blatantly not true.
Yeah.
He made the pie go viral. Yeah. Patti! Patti busted me out, girl. I don't know what you put in this pie, girl.
I remember that that time, that era. I mean, they was like, you couldn't get one.
They couldn't keep them on the
shelves. It was like a Popeye's chicken sandwich. Mm-hmm. You could not get one.
And the internet embarrassed her into giving him like $2,500 and taking a picture with him. But she didn't want to give him anything at first.
Wow. Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm.
It's just the social currency of virality is one thing that we'll never be able to really quantify, but we should.
Also, she's Patti LaBelle too. She's like,
I'm a diva. They sold because I'm Patti LaBelle. But it's like, they were out before the guy made the video and they weren't selling like that.
I never heard of them.
There you go, right? So I don't know. I think that's, you know, if I have a song and the song isn't doing very well and then a guy does a dance to it and then I do a billion streams. You got to give him something. I'm not saying give him half the money you made, but you got to acknowledge that he is played a part in it.
Something.
Yeah. Patti wasn't trying to do it.
Put him in a video or something.
Something. Like Drake did when Shiggy, that dude Shiggy did Kiki, do you love me? I mean, that song went crazy because somebody did a dance to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, you know, show people some love. And that won't happen anymore because TikTok is being canceled.
Vine coming back.
Ooh,
Elon Musk is gonna 7 seconds.
Let's see who's really got skill. Can you make me laugh in 7 seconds in 2024? Because that was easy to do in 2012 or whenever Vine came out. I was so gullible and easy to make laugh in 7 seconds. Somebody just gonna be like, oop, shaboing. And I'm like, oh, that's crazy. This guy's crazy. The damn Daniel. I thought that was so like, yeah, this guy's crazy. He's so cool with his white bands. Man, we were dumb. People were dumb. Maybe TikTok should be banned because like it's making us as dumb as Vine. Vine was making people dumb for sure. But I think people, TikTok picked up where Vine left off. I think people realized like 7 seconds is just, it's dumb. I got to move on from this. And TikTok's like, you want to make 10 minutes? make 10 minutes.
You're 10 minutes.
It's Vine on steroids.
It do show a whole. We don't talk about this. It do show a lot of talented people though.
That's what I'm saying, bro. So that's why I didn't appreciate how you just kind of like dissed it and were rude. You didn't have anything nice to say as I did my little funeral.
It's about the future generation. It's about the future generation.
You want to protect. You want to protect the nation and the people.
Can't be out here looking dumb.
Yeah.
Looking at videos at war like.
They're in World War VII being like, hit the, whoa, and ooh, and yah.
Bullets going bomb blow up behind you and shit.
And then they get their phone and like, oh, shit, man, my friend just blew up. It's crazy,
We don't need that. We don't need that, man. Getting dumb about it days. Yeah, very true.
We're turning into idiocracy very quickly. Anyway, so Ronald graduated from Thibodeau High School in 1983. Dominique studied computer science at Nicholls State University, but quickly lost interest and dropped out. Been there. Shout out to everybody getting their degree and everything. But that shit is boring. I'm like, what the fuck? I don't care, bro. And I got to take three of these classes before I even get to the thing I'm here for? Bro.
What is basketball class? Are you going to basketball class?
I used to meet Fran in the quad, and he's like, yo, you going to fucking English 101? I'm like, nah, but I'm going to go get some lunch, and I'll meet you at basketball class. And that's when we knew this isn't for us.
It's funny because I remember you going like, hey, I'm like, what class do you take? This basketball class? I'm like, oh, you could take that? I said, no.
You could take a basketball class in college?
Let me rearrange
your
schedule,
bro, or whatever.
I picked up that basketball class up so fast.
We were in there working on fundamentals, working with like D3 college kids or whatever. It's like, man, come on, working on my left, get my left to right situation going. Then I'm sweaty. And it's like, well, you got a math class after. It's like, I don't know. The professor said if I feel like I can just come on test day, then I don't have to come to class. And that's the worst thing you could have told me.
Go home.
What? Well, I'll come in on test day. Didn't come in on test day either. Like, damn, today was a test day. Oh, well. It's not for everybody. And it wasn't for Ronald Dominique.
Yeah, especially if you get the check.
I was getting the rebate too. I'm like, all I had to do that first year, I was like, college is great, bro. I barely go to class, go to basketball class. Then I get a check for like $600. I was, this is fantastic. Now I see why people go to college. And then I got my grades back, and they were like, you got to go. they were like, you got so much making up to do. If you want to stick around, it's like, you got to start from scratch, basically. I was like, fuck this.
It's getting the check.
Getting the check. Sometimes money doesn't talk. It's my lesson that I have learned in life. It's like, not even money can incentivize me to want to do more school. When I was done with school, I was ready to go. So anyway, like I said, Ronald Dominique, like Fran and myself, dropped out of college. Because he dropped out of college, he found himself in a low-skill labor job because he had no education. But there are jobs out here that don't require education where you can make a decent or great living. So, you know, because he didn't go to school, he ended up finding that path, and it wasn't a very successful path. But there are paths.
Also, this was in the early
90s. This is 85.
Yeah. That's definitely a different time than what it is.
Sure. But I would argue that it's worse now. Like today, it's really hard to find a job that pays well where you don't have some form of college degree. But in the 80s, trades still existed and were offered more prominently. Eh.
And my rebuttal to that would be, during this time you have social media, so you can be an entrepreneur. It's way higher chance for you to become an entrepreneur than you could be back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where you were like, I didn't go to college. Well, I can sell something
right
to crazy amount of people over just a
no,
couple
the internet
of,
existing
posts.
Has definitely changed the game as far as the argument of the argument against college.
Yeah.
Cause I think at a point it's like either you go to college or you become a plumber. And
yeah.
That's it.
Plumber's a great job, though.
My point is, now you could be like an e-commerce person. You could just sell stuff on your own, not even your own clothing brand. You could just sell stuff on your own and get really good at that or something. Like there's more outlets than
for sure
labor or be a white collar guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like I said, he drops out of college, ends up in a low skill job, is unhappy and is. Floating from job to job in the low-skilled labor department because he struggled to maintain employment due to his disciplinary issues, which I think is one thing I say is some people sometimes it's hard to, for you to find your lot in life. So for me, to me, Ronald Dominique seemed like a guy who was smart, not good at applying himself, or not as smart as he thought he was. So he failed in college, and then he takes these low-skill jobs, and he feels like he's above them. So he feels like he doesn't need to listen to whoever the manager is, because he's like, I'm smarter than you. I was in college for computer science, but you failed. You know, you failed out.
Yeah.
So it's like, who are you to tell me you're the manager of a Burger King? And it's like, well, and you flip burgers at the Burger King.
Yeah.
So just understand the hierarchy and don't talk down to him. Like, he's your manager. He's like, right. Nah, he manages a Burger King. It's like, yeah, and you don't. So don't talk like you're better than him.
Especially the person that could decide if you have a job or not.
Yeah, like, it's like, oh, you think I'm a loser? Well, you're fired. Now you're even bigger loser. Now you don't have a job.
You don't have a job.
So
I'm gonna get in my car and go home. So
exactly, and come back to work tomorrow. So I don't really who's winning in this scenario. So it was hard for Ronald Dominique, to maintain a steady job for long periods of time, but he survived with financial help from his mother and older sister. So, you know, more emasculation, more in the 80s, machismo is at a height, like a man's man, Hulk Hogan's ripping his shirt off. A man is a very defined thing in the 80s. And this guy's flunked out of college. He's being floated by his mom and his older sister, and he's not really feeling very much like in control of his life.
Mm-hmm.
On June 12th, 1985, Ronald was arrested on charges of sexual harassment over the phone. He was fined $75.
How does that work?
Which is probably like, I don't know, $300 in 1985.
Over the phone?
I mean, you can't keep blowing up people's phone. Probably, you know, calling people and breathing heavily on the phone and stuff like that. But one thing I learned from watching that show Baby Reindeer is, at least from the show's perspective, and that was also in the UK.
I did watch it, by the way.
You finished it or you just watched
it? I didn't finish it. I'm almost finished.
it's crazy. The show, it's an insane show. It's so hard to watch. But the show really shows you, at least... The show, I don't know how true it is because I haven't been in the scenario. Like, it's hard to pin down somebody on those kind of charges. Because, like, oh, they're calling me a lot. Or
but that's what I mean. That's why I was like, how? Like, how do you?
Yeah. So it happened in 85, though. He got found guilty on those charges. But based on the show I'm watching, it's like, that's hard to do, though.
But what do you
get? It's not a crime to keep calling somebody, apparently, based on the show. And again, that was the UK, not the United States. Maybe we have different laws and rules here and everything. And if anybody, I know it's probably a trigger or anything to ask somebody, but if anybody's been in a situation where they've been stalked or, you know, anything like that, I would love to know what the process is to, like, get law enforcement involved. Because from things I've seen, it makes it seem like it's very hard, which I feel for, where you're like, I feel like I'm being attacked. I feel cornered. And the police are telling me, well, they need to actually do something before we can do anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know how true that is, but that's how it seems when you watch media about it. It's like threats and saying things to people aren't crimes.
But why I'll go, like, over the phone. I'd never even heard of that before. Like,
well, he was fined, so, I mean, that's like a warning. That's like a slap on the wrist, really. But, you know, I guess that's something, but it's not being arrested. We jump forward a little bit in time. You know, he lays low, kind of, for the most part. I mean, he's still a delinquent, but it wasn't until May of 1994 that he ran into the law again when he was arrested for drunk driving and was once again fined. On August 25th, 1996, a partially naked young man jumped from the window of Ronald Dominique's sister's house, where Dominique had been living at the time. The young man told neighbors that Dominique had raped him and attempted to kill him. Dominique was arrested, and his bail was set at $100,000. When the case was transferred to the courts, the prosecutor's office could not locate the alleged victim or establish his identity. This resulted in the case being dismissed in November of 1996. The young man was probably a sex worker or embarrassed, which is even sadder, you know. Again, I hate to, but I bring it back to that show Baby Reindeer. The character is so complicated because there is this element of I'm a man and I was raped by a man. Whereas I don't want to tell people that. It's, again, that level of emasculation and everything. So I can understand how it might be hard for a victim to come forward and want to testify and sit in front of a courtroom and explain how that could happen to him. Which I think, again, as hard as it was to watch, was explained very well by this show. That is, Baby Reindeer is very hard to watch. But I learned, I'm going to get back to the story, but the show, what I learned, and call me naive or whatever, but I feel like we do our best to try to learn from the perspective of women. But to watch a show like that and see this stuff happening to a man, it changed. I don't know. It just did something. I never seen that perspective before. Because, you know, we say stuff and we read stories or, you know, women send us emails and we go, man, you know, women have such a hard time. And men in some cases, like we say, we try to say that to be inclusive because it happens to men as well. But I've never seen it depicted in media. And to see a person be sexually assaulted and like groomed and all these things, it just was like a very interesting perspective. The show has a interesting perspective that I've never seen in a show before. And maybe there's other shows out there like it, but I've never seen that perspective taken before. And I thought it was very fascinating. I still grapple on if it's good or not, but I thought it was very profound and like captivating. I don't know if I would watch it again is my point. When I say, is it good or not? Like, I think it's an important show and I don't know if that's giving it too much credit, but I think it's an important show to kind of see a perspective I've never seen before.
Yeah.
Anyway, so unfortunately, Ronald Dominique is accused of being of a rape and attempted murder, but the victim doesn't come forward. On February 10th, 2022, Dominique was arrested for assaulting a woman in Terrebonne Parish during a Mardi Gras festival, which is probably Mardi Gras Carnival or Carnival. Mardi Gras Carnival. I don't if I'm saying it wrong, sorry about Carnival. Mardi Gras, Carnival, these street festivals where it's women having a good time and being uninhibited and whatever. Prime real estate for creeps.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to Mardi Gras, you show some beads, women lifting their tops up.
That's the thing?
Yeah, Mardi Gras is that's every year.
I know Mardi Gras, but like the beads.
I've never been, but I would assume so. That's like part of the culture. I don't know if that's
okay.
I don't know if that's going anywhere.
They
but
do
very
Spain,
dangerous
right?
In the era, you know, time that we're in now, where everybody has camera phones and everything. It's probably very like,
it's probably not what
you can risk you
be,
losing your job. You end up on somebody's TikTok. That's a point against TikTok. If you're putting boobs on your TikTok of women that didn't consent to be filmed, that's not okay.
It's probably not as fun though. Like, I feel like those, like, for example, what was the Freaknik?
Freaknik,
it was
yes.
Like one of those things where it's like you have to be there. You only experience it when you're there.
Oh yeah, of course.
Now it's like that's why I was like I'm like let's do that because like you can like see it on video now. It's like,
yeah, I don't want to live vicariously through people.
Yeah,
that
sounds
having a good
yeah
time.
That's like that sounds that's whack.
That was the kind of like, but here, check this out though. That's why Girls Gone Wild was such a hit for so many years. As disgusting as that guy was, people were buying those tapes. Dudes, right. Creepy dudes, yeah. And it's like they didn't show me their boobs, but they're showing somebody their boobs, and I love the idea of. That I get to kind of live vicariously through whoever they're showing their boobs to. Like, that was a whole market for a few years.
Yeah.
And then if they start playing that fucking steel Jamaican drum at 2 o'clock in the morning when I was like 9, bing, ba dung, bong, bing, ba dung, bang, it's Girls Gone Wild. Bong, ba ding, bing, bo dung, ba ring, bum, bum, ba dung, ba ding, ba dung. And that's when I knew it was time to go to bed.
Was it?
Yeah, if you're up in the infomercial.
Was it time to go to bed or was it time to like.
Get right?
I want to guess a little bit.
Oh, what? No.
Whoa, I didn't say
yeah,
that.
Never mind.
I said to stay up.
No, right.
As a young child, you go like, you kind of, you know, it piques your interest.
I'm burning the midnight oil at this point. Now it's getting interesting.
Now it's getting.
I'm like, nine. No, I wasn't a creep at 9. Wait a minute now.
Yeah, you were. That picture of you, you was thinking about the fucking. People can't see me.
Wild and Golden Corral. The combination, 9 years old. It's a Golden Corral Mac and digital pasties that say Girls Gone Wild on women's boobs.
Yeah.
Lifting the shirt up in the back of an RV. Anyway, but no, seriously, all those documentaries, I understand it was terrible. I get all that.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to act like I didn't live through that and see that. And it was a time. That and Jerry Springer pay-per-views, I seen a few of those.
Jerry B's?
Jerry Springer got wild on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
They had little people fighting, and it was crazy.
Jerry Springer was wild, man.
Jerry Springer, just so many things that could never be on TV ever again.
No.
So like I said, Ronald Dominique gets arrested for assaulting a woman at a Mardi Gras festival, and Dominique claimed that the woman hit him with a baby stroller in one of the parking lots, and then Dominique began arguing with her and demanded an apology. After the woman apologized, Dominique punched the woman in the face, as one would do after one shows contrition and apologizes. He's like, I'm still mad. Fuck that. He punches her in the face. His assault charges were later dropped after an agreement was reached between Dominique and the woman. So they settled out of court or something like that. Or you know, it didn't go any further because they were able to mitigate some kind of solution. As you guys can tell from the things I'm describing as well, you Fran, as you're hearing, Dominique was apparently had a temperamental guy, and he was terrible at communication. He was overweight, and he had low self-esteem and poor health. So again, and like I said, I mean, he dropped out of college. He's not very successful in his career field. This guy is a certified scrub, a loser. And the only thing that makes him a loser is his mentality. There are plenty of people out there. Shout out to David Goggins, one of my favorite books. There are plenty of people out there who are down in their luck, having a hard time. You're only a loser when you relegate yourself to that life. If you're not doing anything to change your circumstances, be it the smallest thing. Anybody who just accepts that that's their lot in life, whether that's you're in that position because of your mental health, go get your mental health right. Like, do something, but you're just like, I don't know. And then you're mad at the world about it. That makes you a loser. Mm. If you're just like in a hard time and you're down, I get that. That's tough. But when you start like taking that out on people, you're a loser. Like, you're mad at the world because of your position. That's not cool. That's very loser behavior. Like, this is early, before we had a word for it. This guy's an incel. Like, he believes the world owes him something. He thinks he should be cooler. He doesn't understand why this guy is able to get the person's attention that he wants, and I should be getting it. It's not his fault. It's everybody else's fault. You guys are wrong. It's nothing I'm doing. You guys are the people that are doing bad. Yeah, these are sick people. So towards the end of his high school career, Ronald realized that he was homosexual. And he began frequenting local homosexual bars to spend his time there. And this is where we get into the dark stuff. So everything I said, this guy's doesn't have the best personality. He's not an attractive person. He is an aggressive person. He hits women. He's kind of a piece of shit. So we can understand that he probably wasn't going to end up on the best path, but who could have expected this? So anyway, Dominique's victims tended to be teenagers and men between the ages of 16 and 46.
Gross.
Not all of his victims were homosexual, which means he was just straight up sexually assaulting and raping these men who weren't even like
minors.
Not that if they were his same sexual orientation, that makes it any better, but he didn't discriminate on the way that his victims identified.
Yeah.
Most of the victims were African American.
Do you think he liked African-American men, or there was some...
Yeah, I'm sure he had an affinity for, you know, some Don S.E. black dudes. He often met the victims during walks or drives in his truck, as well as in gay bars. Dominique would lure men to his trailer with offers of alcohol, drugs, and a place to stay, or group sex with his fictional girlfriend, which is, I'm assuming, how he would get men who weren't identifying as gay.
Right.
It's like, man, I got him. My girlfriend likes to party. That's how he looks, how he talks. I don't know what he sounds like. Man, my girlfriend likes to party, man. You know, we come over, we do some blow. We both have at her. But you get there and the party's not that at all.
Which is crazy.
Very crazy. Both ways that his, both of his approaches were crazy. All of his approaches were super crazy.
Now, I get the part where drugs are involved. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that. But when it's like, a guy goes, his wife, my wife, or girlfriend.
You want to go tag team my wife, man?
That was wild.
It's insane. A lot of people don't say no to that offer, though. There's a lot of people in the world that say yes to that offer, for sure. He was a big guy, as we established, so he would lure these people in these precarious situations, and then he would overpower them, bind them, and then rape them. Dominique would then strangle his victims and load their bodies into the back of his truck, and he would take them out, and he would dump their bodies in remote areas in one of six parishes around Louisiana.
Yeah.
Mm. His first known victim was a young man who was 19 years old named David Mitchell. In July 1997, David was hitchhiking alone from his grandmother's house after leaving a birthday party for a family member. David's body was found on July 14th, 1997, in a ditch along a highway near a wooded area, which means he probably picked him up while he was hitchhiking and immediately attacked him. Didn't even get him very far down the road. He was found in near a wooded area in St. Charles Parish. His body was found 2 days after the last reported sighting of him. Forensic research showed that there was ditch water present in David's lungs, and his death was initially ruled as accidental drowning. David's father insisted that his son was an excellent swimmer and that he had been murdered instead. Dominique later included David's death in his confessions after he was arrested, which we'll get to. But David's relatives denied that he was homosexual, used drugs, or had financial trouble, which is terrible. You know, that's a whole nother aspect of victimhood and victimology is your family being responsible for advocating for you and them being ashamed of you.
Yeah.
You know, like they couldn't accept that this man lived the life that he lived, and therefore he wouldn't have been in a situation where he would end up like this. So, yeah, I guess he drowned because that definitely didn't happen to him because he wasn't gay. And he didn't do drugs. So sometimes you got to let your own shame go, man. People end up in the situations that they end up in, and you don't get to, like, negate their journey in life and deny them justice. I think that's super gross.
So his dad was saying...
They found water in his lungs, and his dad was like, my son can swim. He didn't drown.
Right. Okay.
But then they also were like, well, that didn't happen to him either. He wasn't raped and drugged, and he didn't do any of that stuff, so that didn't happen either.
Oh, his dad was saying this.
Well, family members. I don't know if his dad.
Okay, right. Okay, that's why I was getting confused. Got you. Yeah, because when I read that, I went, you know, that's it. That's one of those situations where, prior to this or at some time during their relationship, there was like they headbutted and it was like you said, they didn't. His dad or family members didn't, you know, like his lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then when it's something tragic happens like this, it's like, oh well, you know, denying what. But, you know, possibly could have happened. You're like, no, that definitely didn't happen because he didn't. It's like, well, maybe, I don't know that relationship, but, like, what if him and his dad haven't talked in, you know, months or years? And you sitting here, like, basically saying, like, I don't really know my son.
Yeah, speaking for your son.
I didn't accept accept his lifestyle, which I think is totally fucked up.
Yeah. But what's also could be just as gross is this guy could have talked to his dad every day and just knew his dad wouldn't accept him under his terms and never told him what his lifestyle was. So it comes as a shock to everybody.
Yeah, true.
You know? Because he was coming from a birthday party of a family member. So this guy could have been in the family, going to all the functions and just like afraid to live his truth because he didn't want to be rejected by his family.
Yeah. I would never.
No, it's just. Everybody love everybody. Shout out to the movie Semi-Pro starring Will Ferrell. It's a silly movie, but that's a great, you know, it's a great edict to live by. Everybody love everybody. Dominique's next victim was 20-year-old Gary Pierre of St. Charles Parish. Gary had recently been arrested for drug trafficking, and his body was found fully clothed with no signs of physical trauma or drugs in his system. Gary was 20 years old, as I said, and he was found in December of 1997. Just a few months after David Mitchell's body was found. So again, it's all speculation, of course, but that could have been a situation where that was Ronald Dominique trying to fuel his drug habit. That might have been nothing related to any kind of sexual assault because it wasn't
right.
There was no signs of it. That just might speak to the violence of him. On July 31st, 1998, Larry Ranson, who was 38 years old, was killed by Ronald Dominique. He was struggling with drug addiction and was homeless. And Larry Ranson was also the first victim that was subjected to bondage by Ronald Dominique. So he was found still, you know, tied up when his body was found. And that's called an escalation. So in October of 1998, so 10 months after Gary Pierre was found, Ronald Dominique meets Oliver... Or Ronald Dominique meets Oliver LeBanks, who was 27 years old. They met in Metairie, Louisiana. After Dominique's arrest, he claimed that Oliver was addicted to drugs and had offered him sexual favors in exchange for money. Dominique said that he had sex with him, then beat and strangled him. Oliver's body was disposed of on the outskirts of Metairie, and he was found on October 4th, 1998. During the autopsy of Oliver's body, traces of Dominique's semen was found on the body's surfaces. Relatives and friends of Oliver's confirmed that he had only recently began a vagrant lifestyle after he had been fired from his job due to his drug abuse. So he really targets people who are very down on their luck, a very disgusting human being, finds people in their worst time, people struggling with addiction, and then offering the only escape that they have, offering them that for free or in exchange for sexual favors, and then he takes advantage of them. He's the worst kind of person. He's the worst kind of predator. The fall of 1988 was a high level of violence for Ronald Dominique. So in the same month that he killed Oliver LeBanks, he meets Joseph Brown, who was 16 years old. He met him in Kenner, Louisiana. He lured him to his truck with the promises of crack cocaine, 16 years old. I mean, it doesn't get more down on your luck, hard place like, than that, you know?
This might be too much to ask, but it's like, can you draw a line somewhere?
Of him, like on his morality?
Yeah.
No, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, when you're a sociopath like this, you love that somebody's easy to lure. That's like, it's, there's no compassion. It's like, oh yeah, like this is it's shooting fish in a barrel.
I'm talking about it being a child.
Oh, no.
It being a child, it being women, it being kids, like.
No. Yeah, you're asking for morals from like a shark, basically. This guy's like dead in the eyes, only thinking about predatory
behavior. A 16-year-old boy.
Yeah. A 16-year-old boy who's addicted to crack cocaine. So you see that kid and you don't think, man, I wish I could help him. Like, you're like, oh, a victim. Nice. So he lures him to his truck.
He definitely is not saying victim, but yeah.
Say it again.
Said victim, he's definitely not using that term.
No. He lured him back to his truck with promises of crack cocaine. And after sharing the drugs, so this guy, he has, so Ronald Dominique does crack cocaine. He has it on him.
He does it all.
Yeah. After sharing the drug with a 16-year-old Joseph Brown, Dominique then beats Joseph several times with a blunt object and then strangles him with a plastic bag. And then just leaves his body there. A month later, in November of 1998, Dominique lures a man named Bruce Williams in a similar manner as he did Joseph Brown, so with the promises of drugs. Bruce Williams was 18 years old. So as we're seeing the escalations now. We're seeing how the evolution of how he lures them in. His MO is starting to unfold. He eventually starts to tie them up. But also I feel like he started to find an area that he liked a lot, because these ages dipping in and out of the age range, it feels like he found a nice area that he liked. So 16, 18... Bruce Williams was 18 years old. And then May of 1999, so he took a little bit of a hiatus, and maybe he didn't, but these are his known victims, which is always the scary part of doing these stories where you go, you know,
these only ones
from
we know
2000,
about.
In May of 2001, he did this, and then it wasn't until July of 2003 that he did this, and you go, are we
which
sure?
I never buy. Yeah. Ever.
Yeah.
You can't tell me you're a psychopath like this and be able to take a break. Because those are the most dangerous ones who can take a can just take stop? Off. Where you go like, they can stop to kind of like, take the heat off a little bit.
Because the detectives are banking on you those continuing to kill people so they can catch you.
Yeah.
So if you that's can control that's yourself, that's terrifying. Yeah.
That's a different evil. That's evil right there. Yeah. You can, I'm going to just take a break.
Yeah, it's getting a little hot right now. I'm going to stop having fun for a little bit.
You can, but that's like having some type of compulse control.
Yes.
Where you can go like, you know what? I can turn it off for 3 to 4 months.
I'll deny myself for a bit. It's going to be frustrating, but I'll be fine.
I can go cold turkey for, you know, whatever. And then I can, that's, it's just, man.
Yeah. So,
Olivia, but go to sleep? But to do stuff like this and be able to sleep at night, warm, comfy.
Well, he's very, very much sleeping warm and comfy because he loves this. He's like, this is a great night.
It's just great. Yeah, that's just insane to me, man.
His conscience is clean. He got to do the thing he loves.
How? It's just to kill people, to kill someone.
But see, this is why this fan is a weird word. But this is why, and I'm not an advocate is a weird word too, because I'm not advocating anything. But this is why I understand criminal profiling, where people go, somebody like Ted Bundy or the shoe bomber or Samuel Little. Why you choose to study these people as opposed to, you should just take them on the back and kill them. They're animals. Ed Gein, like, you should go kill them. Just take them on the back. They're heartless animals. It's like, but the reason when we go, how do you sleep at night? Or how do you find yourself doing this? You got to understand these people to try to possibly catch people like them in the future.
You can't, though.
But you can. I mean, it's been done. People have studied these people. There are profilers who understand the motives of these people and their actions and what's coming next and all these people. Sexual sadists and all this knowledge comes from studying people who are sociopaths and psychopaths.
Yeah, but how do you believe what some of these people are saying? I mean, like...
Oh, that's fair, too.
The brain is being... By it being so complex and difficult to study, and it's a lot of the brain that we don't it's still being we don't know a lot about, but like,
sure, but some
you only you only know what they're telling you.
But some stuff is like,
I get
empirical evidence. I mean,
right,
like, if 9 out of every 10 serial killers were like dropped on their head or neglected or had some kind of weird sexual assault from a parent in their past, like, then that's an outlier. That's a thing that is unique to their life. We can use them as a crystal ball of sorts. Nothing is definitive, but you go, you have all the signs of somebody who could be a psychopath.
The trend, I get it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Nothing is like definitive. The words that come out of their mouth are fact, but if you can, if they say they were molested by their father or by their mother, and then that's something that you can look into, and then you go, well, this matches up with the profile of this serial killer from 20 years ago. The same things happened to him.
Right.
If he's if he lies the about his favorite ice cream or something like that, then that, whatever. Yeah, of course they're going to lie about some stuff. They're crazy. But yeah, in May of 1999, Manuel Reed, who was 21 years old, Dominique was driving around. He spotted Manuel Reed. And when he spotted him, he pulled up on him. And Manuel offered to sell Ronald Dominique some drugs. Dominique agrees and allowed Manuel to get into his truck, where he then, after driving a short distance, raped and strangled Manuel. He later left his body in a dumpster in the city's industrial zone, almost a mile from where Joseph Brown's body was discovered. So again, that's another, he's finding his dump areas, he's finding his pool of victims, he's finding out his own internal MO and how he likes to get the job done and how to adjust to things going wrong. We're witnessing a person perfect his sickness victim by victim, which, as fucked up as it is, I find that to be fascinating, because something goes wrong. Somebody escapes, somebody does this, and you go, oh shit, okay, now I'm going to use zip ties. Like, you start to see the evolution of, oh, now I'm usually I offer them the drugs, now I'm going to actually let them do the drugs, so now they're disoriented. You start to see the adjustments, because they're predators.
Yeah.
In June of 1999, Angel Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, I'm sorry if I got that wrong, I apologize, was 34 years old. Dominique killed Angel, who was homeless and struggling with drug addiction, in June of 1999. Dominique initially attempted to dump Angel's body in a dumpster, but left the body on the street when he found the dumpster to be too full. So there's no, when you talk about compassion, any of the things that you talk about, sleeping at night, these are, he feels nothing for these people. Went to throw them away like trash, and then when the trash can was full, it's like, oh, whatever, throw them right here. I don't know, close enough.
Yeah,
that's how little he cares about these people. Not even giving them not even hiding them at this point. That says so much about his character and how, at this point, how many bodies he's raked up. He's like, yeah, just leave it here. Who cares about these people? Nobody cares about these people. These people are drug addicts, crackheads. This is how he feels about them. So he doesn't even feel the need to hide them in the dumpsters. Oh, the dumpster's full. All right, well, put them next to the dumpster. Who cares?
And that's what. And that's why I asked you in the beginning, where I go like, do you think he really liked African-American men?
Yeah, it might be more like a product of convenience than any kind of fetish.
It has to be.
Yeah, he might not have any kind of preference, but he goes, I started killing these people from this area and nobody cared and there was a bunch of them and it was easy and that area just happened to be a mostly black area.
I don't have a job and I'm limited on gas, so I'm going to just stay.
Yeah, I'm going to stay in the same area. It could be that. We might be overthinking. To him, it's like, I didn't care if they were black or whatever. That they just were the homeless, drug-addicted people who were in the area. Most of them just happened to be black. So in the case of Angel Mejia, the coroner examined his body and found that Angel had been tied up with a rope prior to his death. On August 1999, Mitchell Johnson was his next victim. Dominique offered Johnson drugs in exchange for sexual favors. Dominique then took Mitchell to a wooded area outside of Metairie and tied him up, raped him, and strangled him. On September 1st, 1999, Mitchell's fully nude body was discovered. And this proceeds, I mean, I want to give every victim their acknowledgement, but this proceeds for, he's killing people with impunity. This persists for years. There was a victim in 2000 named Michael Vincent, similar MO. There was a victim in October of 2000 named Kenneth Randolph, who was 20 years old. Kenneth was a child molester who had been prosecuted 3 times in the past. Dominique lured Kenneth to his trailer, telling him that a girl wanted to have sex with him there. And then once inside, Dominique attacked and murdered him. Dominique then took Kenneth's body to a field outside of the city limits, where Kenneth's partially nude remains were found on October 6th of 2000. Now, we're not going to, like, make him out to be some kind of vigilante shining knight or whatever. Maybe he knew that Kenneth Randolph was a convicted child molester. Maybe he didn't. Kenneth Randolph is still a victim of Ronald Dominique's. I don't want to play that game of, like, well, he did this, so fuck him. Like, I don't think Ronald Dominique cared if he was or wasn't a child molester. He chose him to be a victim. And yeah, I don't know. That one's an interesting one as well. But again, like I said, this persists for years. In October of 2002, he had a victim named Annika Jones, who was 26 years old. Annika was a petty criminal. Dominique attacked Annika, tied him up, raped him, and strangled him. And then Dominique later left his body under a highway overpass, and it was discovered several hours later. So that was kind of a close call for him. And later on in that same year in 2002, October, it was Annika Jones, late 2000, so we're talking about, you know, November, December, Detrell Woods, who was 19 years old, Ronald Dominique was living with his sister in a rural community of Bayou Blue in late 2002. Dominique finds a job as a specialist who checked electricity levels at a local power plant, and Dominique meets 19-year-old Detrell Woods while traveling for his job. Dominique leaves Detrell's body and his bicycle in a field. Detrell's remains were not discovered until May of 2003. His cause of death was deemed to be asphyxia and accidental in nature due to Detrell's history of asthma. So they pinned it on himself. Like they said he must have just had an asthma attack and nobody was around and he died.
Wow.
They came to this conclusion even though his body was found partially nude. Dominique later confessed and claimed responsibility for Detrell's death. But it wasn't until he did that they ruled it a homicide. They called it an accidental death for years until Ronald Dominique confessed to it when he was eventually caught, which we will get to.
Mm.
So this is, again, just for clarification, because I've been saying a lot of names and going through a lot of victims. His first victim was 1997. We're in 2004 now.
Yeah.
So he went almost a decade killing people with impunity. On October 2004, Larry Matthews, who was 46 years old, was lured to Ronald Dominique's sister's house with a promise of drugs. And during this process, Larry lost consciousness due to an overdose. Dominique then raped and strangled Larry and left his body 20 miles away from the crime scene. Since Larry was homeless, he was not reported missing, and his body was identified by fingerprints.
Wow.
Keeping it in the same month of 2004 of October, Dominique also strangled Michael Barnett and left his body to be discovered on the same day, on October 24th of 2004. So, you know, the bodies are being discovered more frequently. There's less time. There's less anonymity. I think that it became a full-blown manhunt to understand that there's somebody killing these people. Even though they weren't connecting everything, some people were just being called asthma attacks and accidental deaths.
Yeah.
I think there was a department or something out there actively searching for a killer and connecting the dots.
Yeah.
In February 2005, Dominique lured 22-year-old Leon Lorette, who was an alcoholic and homeless, and also had previously lived with one of Dominique's other victims, Michael Barnett, and Annika Jones. Leon, ironically enough, was actually considered to be the prime suspect in Annika Jones's murder because he was the last person to see him before his disappearance. And then he becomes a victim himself, which is a sad way for your name to be cleared in a murder investigation.
Right.
Mm. In April of 2005, August Watkins met Ronald Dominique. And August was also a homeless man who was lured to his truck with the promises of an overnight stay in his trailer, a warm bed.
To sleep, to rest.
Yeah. When August got to Dominique's trailer, Dominique gave him alcohol and offered him to have sex with a female acquaintance. So just like the hell of a dream. You get a bed, some booze, yeah. You get a woman. That's like a cowboy's dream.
Yeah.
Dominique then tied August up, raped him, and strangled him.
Mm.
After August's body was discovered, police began to consider for the first time that a serial killer may be active in the Kenner and Houma areas.
Oh, sorry. I mean, how many victims we done talked about so far?
Up 10 plus, 15. Christ. I mean, it's crazy. Since 1997, it's 2005 now, and they go,
Oh, I have an idea.
What if this is all connected?
Took you that long? And you're a professional? Stop.
But this is why, you know, implicit bias is why this stuff needs to be talked about. When you go, somebody's homeless, somebody's drug addicted, somebody's a sex worker, you right. write them off as being a hazard of the job, a lifestyle hazard. So they can't be all connected. This is what happens to people when you're addicted to drugs and you live on the streets. This is what happens when you're a sex worker and you live on the streets. Like, you die. And that could be they can be not connected, but that clouds your judgment in being able to see them as being connected sometimes. But yeah, it took for these murders to be similar in nature for some detectives to try to ask that question, posit that question of if they may be connected. And then the case was handed over to the FBI. They go, I don't know, it's a lot of victims, possibly. Who knows? All cloudy. Some of them are, we don't have their identities. They're homeless. We don't feel like dealing with this. Pass it to the FIBA.
FIBA.
In April of 2005, same month, so, you know, his frequency is ramping up again. In April of 2005, only a few days after killing August Watkins, Ronald Dominique killed 23-year-old Kurt Cunningham. In the summer of 2005, Alonzo Hogan and Wayne Smith also became victims of Ronald Dominique. Like I said, it was a late summer when Dominique murdered 28-year-old Alonzo Hogan in St. Charles Parish and then 17-year-old Wayne Smith in Terrebonne Parish. Dominique lured both men by promising sex with one of his female friends. So he's a young kid. I mean, like, this is... He's like Willy Wonka. He's promising you all your favorite things. You're 17 years old. He's like, you want to have sex with a girl? You have a drug addiction problem? He's like, you want some crack? You're homeless? You want a bed and some booze and a woman? Like, he's going around just making these false promises to get what he wants.
Yeah, and that's why I can't say, how do you fall for that? Because 17, 23 years old, again, when you're hooked on drugs, you're like, I have no space to be like, how do you fall for something like that? Like, come on. Yeah. Like, that just doesn't, it just, these people already, these are young adults and they don't, kids, they don't already have, don't have much.
Hopeless.
And then you offer them this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you, and your situation is like, how do you turn something like that?
Yeah.
Even if it's false, it's a false dream, but you go like, I ain't nothing this good offered to me in months, years.
Yeah, for sure. It's tough. It's a tough spot for sure. Now, it's funny, interesting that you said that. Alonzo Hogan had no prior convictions and was not known to use drugs. He was raped by Ronald Dominique before his death. So this is a 23-year-old dude. He was not the typical victim profile of Ronald Dominique. He had no prior convictions. He was not known to use drugs. He might have just been down on his luck. Maybe he wasn't. I don't even know. Wayne also had no prior convictions and was not known to use drugs. No traces of semen were found on Wayne's body due to it being in a canal and severely decomposing. So he dropped this dude off in like a ravine, some kind of waterway, and it made doing autopsy very difficult, nearly impossible. In September of 2005, Chris DeVille, who was 40 years old, was trying to hitchhike out of Napoleonville after Hurricane Katrina. Wow. This guy's like the devil. I mean, worst moments of people's lives. You're trying to hitchhike out of a hellish situation after Hurricane Katrina.
Vulnerable.
And Dominique picks him up and later left Chris's body in a field. His skeletal remains were found in October of 2005. Now we're in November of 2005. It was late November in 2005 when Dominique killed 21-year-old Nicholas Pellegrim in LaForche Parish. During the investigation into his death, Nicholas's family told the investigators that he had borrowed $400 from a local drug dealer and had missed a payment, causing him to receive death threats. Mm. This investigation led authorities to believe that Nicholas's death was drug deal related until Dominique confessed to the killing as well. From Nicholas Pellegrin, we jump a year. Again, like you said, Fran, skepticism and everything. A guy with this appetite and this frequency of killing to go from November 2005 to October 2006, I find it hard to believe there's not some other victims in there, but these are the known victims. So now we're in October 2006. This is Dominique's last confirmed victim, who was 27-year-old Christopher Stutterfield. He was a bisexual man that Dominique had met in the summer of 2006 when the two began dating. So a little different approach from Ronald Dominique in this case. While on a date together in Iberville Parish on October 14, 2006, Dominique hit Christopher on the head with a heavy object and caused him to lose consciousness. After Christopher's body was discovered, police interviewed his family and friends, who all stated that they last saw Christopher with a man driving a black SUV. A month later, in November 2006, Dominique came under suspicion after Ricky Wallace, a Bayou Blue resident, claimed that Dominique had lured him to his trailer with an offer of drugs to share and to have sex with a girl. And once Ricky entered the trailer, Dominique had tried to convince Ricky that the girl was into bondage and offered to tie him up. Like, yeah, yeah, man, she's on her way. Let me tie you up.
Yeah.
And then when she comes in, boom, you already got her all hot and bothered because you're doing what she likes.
Mm.
Ricky refused. Don't worry, friend. Ricky refused. Like, I'll let her tie me up. Like, one of those kind of things. Like, I hear you, but I'll let her do it. No, no, man, because then it saves time. Then you get right to the boning. You know, you use weird words like that.
It's like you gotta run to somebody that goes, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, today was the day.
Can we wait? Today was the day. Let's wait on that one.
Let's let her. Yeah. I don't even know if I really am into her yet. I gotta see her.
I gotta see her.
I'm telling you, man, you're gonna be into her, and then she might leave if you're not tied up when she gets here.
Yeah. So hold that thought.
I'll roll the dice. So he refused. So,
play my hand.
Yeah, yeah. So Ricky refused and was allowed to leave the trailer soon after. Because I guess maybe Ricky had some size on him. Maybe he didn't feel like he had the advantage. So he's like, if I can't tie you up, I don't know if I can just jump you. So he's like, I'll get you next time. This is how confident he probably was. He's like, I'll let him go and I'll try it again another time.
Ricky was like, I'm going right to
the police.
He had a golden glove necklace on or something.
Yeah, he had something where he's like,
Dominique was like, maybe I shouldn't.
He didn't fall for the old let me tie you up trick.
The old trickeroo.
Yeah, so I'm going to let this guy go this time, but I'll get you. Yeah. Police questioned Dominique because Ricky went straight to the police. And the police came and questioned Ronald Dominique about these allegations. And although police were skeptical due to Ricky's history of stretching the truth, Dominique eventually agreed to give a blood sample when he was being questioned by the police, which is very dumb.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of times when people do that, they think that police detectives, when you offer to give them a piece of evidence, you're going to go, well, if he offered to do it, never mind. Yeah. He must be innocent.
It's a, what do you call it?
It's reverse psychology.
Reverse psychology. Yeah. Exactly.
It's like polygraph me. Okay. Well, I mean, I can't really do the polygraph right now, but I'm just saying I'm saying that's how honest I am, is that I will do the polygraph. Okay. Well, come with us and go do the polygraph. I mean, I can't do it today, but I'm just saying, don't you understand that I'm saying I will do it, so that must mean I'm innocent? No, well, we'll just, if you're offering to do it, well, let's go do it. You guys don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. And what was this, in 06?
This was in 06, yes.
06, that wasn't that long ago. But I would go, this may work.
Well, let me say,
from the past shit I've seen, people done got away with, I go, you know
well,
what?
Well, also look
I'll
at his track
try.
Record. It's been 10 years. He hasn't gotten caught. He probably feels like I'm untouchable. Take my blood. I'm innocent, man. Take it. They're like, okay, can you go get the needles and stuff out of my truck? He's like, fuck. Yep. Well, now I can't say never mind. Fuck. And again, it's been 10 years. He's like, well, they probably won't find anything. I've been clean as a whistle. Because he thinks he's a good serial killer. But in reality, his victim pool is a bunch of people who detectives have gone, he was a drug addict, so he probably overdosed. This, that, and the third, he probably had an asthma attack. We don't really need to look into that. And he thinks, bro, I'm doing such a good job of covering these murders up that I must be the greatest serial killer of all time.
Yeah.
And so I think he really thought, like, well, damn, they played chicken with me and I lost, but my blood probably isn't anywhere. I haven't gotten caught in all this time. Like, my crime scenes are probably super clean. And it's like, no, your crime scenes are a mess, and they have DNA evidence all over the place, but they just didn't think it was important because they came to an assumption about what happened.
Right.
And now you just gave them the piece that they needed. So like I said, he agreed to give a blood sample, and in the course of the investigation, detectives learned that Angel Mejia, Joseph Brown, and Gary Pierre all knew each other. The three men also lived in close proximity to one another. So he, like I said, he found his victim pool, his victim area, and his, you know, and stayed within that area. By the end of November 2006, DNA testing matched Dominique's profile with that of the killer who had left traces of semen on the bodies of Oliver LeBanks and Manuel Reed. A warrant was issued, and Dominique was arrested on December 1st, 2006 at a homeless shelter, probably prowling for another victim.
Or hiding
in plain sight. At the time of his arrest, Dominique told police that he knew it was just a matter of time before he was caught. He had moved out of his sister's house recently to avoid inconveniencing her with his inevitable arrest. Allegedly is what he says. I don't. Again, this is one of those situations where that right there, you go, this guy's a sociopath, psychopath. I don't believe any of that. Like you say, how can you believe these people when they just you could they just be lying? I don't believe that. He's like, I knew I was gonna be arrested, so I just didn't want to inconvenience my sister, so I moved out of respect.
Cause I'm a good guy. I'm just a good person.
Just a nice guy like that. I didn't want you guys kicking her door down, and then she got to get in the door. I was like, I'll just leave. At the police station after his arrest, directly after his arrest, Dominique agreed to cooperate with the investigation and confessed to 23 murders, describing them in detail. Dominique was able to provide information on most of his victims, including their addictions and other factors, such as if they had voluntarily agreed to be tied up, handcuffed, and treated similarly since they wanted to earn money.
I guess, right?
Yeah. So I guess in the case of Ricky Wallace, I'm guessing he didn't have any addictions. He just offered him a girl to have sex with, and he was like, nah, this is getting
He just wanted to have a little fun.
Yeah, he had no leverage on him. He wasn't dealing with somebody who was swimming in addiction or something. Right. He just went, I can go get a girl. I go to the bar. Like, I'm not letting you tie me up. And that's a little too inconvenient. It's not worth it. I think that was maybe the first time he came up against somebody who wasn't desperate.
Yeah.
Wasn't struggling with something, needed this, needed a bed, needed a fix or any of that kind of stuff. Ricky was just like, hey,
something,
bro.
Something. This dude had to be 6 foot, something.
Yeah, it was something.
That dude must have had some type of physical stature where he was just like, okay, whatever I'm at, this plan is not going to work.
Yeah, fuck it. Abort.
Abort immediately.
Bail on this. Ricky was like, tie me up. Nah, I'm good, man. Okay, well, come by tomorrow. I'll tell her come by tomorrow. I'll tie you up tomorrow. Maybe you think about it. Yeah, man, sure. And went straight to the police station. So like I said, he confessed to 23 murders, describing them in great detail. Dominique claimed that he wanted to get rid of any witnesses as he was not willing to serve another prison sentence.
Okay.
Dominique also claimed that his 1996 rape arrest left him in a constant emotional state and he had began to show symptoms of a mental disorder. So, yeah, it was his rape victim's fault for getting him arrested or getting him in trouble. And that's what sent him down this whole path. It was everybody else's fault but his.
But also, this guy said, Dominique, said that he would let potential victims go if they refused to be restrained.
Yeah, Ricky Wallace, that's exactly what
happened. Come on, man.
But that's what happened with Ricky Wallace.
I get that. But he's been, out of what? 1 out of 20? Come on, bro. You're not telling me most of these victims was like.
Consented?
Sure. They consented? Like, come on. No. He was on the back end of his little run.
Yeah, so you're saying you don't think Ricky Wallace was the only victim who refused to be tied up, but you think he was the first one that he may have been one of the first ones that he let go, and then they went to go do something about it.
Yeah, because like I'm telling you, that other dude must have had been a big guy. Something. Yeah. Built strong or something.
I can believe that. Yeah, and then you're just like, okay, and then you hit him over the head.
Okay, yeah. Like this guy. Right. This guy was on a run, 23 victims that we know of. Mm-hmm. In the prime of his run, he was, he was going in. On the back end half of that, he got a little lazy with the dumping and all leaving DNA evidence everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was like, he probably was just like, man, I done went 23 or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't. He may have lost the energy or whatever, something.
I'm not confident if this goes south. I can handle him.
You can, that's of course, possible. You can say that now that he got caught. We like, they said no. Then look, it's not my fault. If they wouldn't have said no, then I wouldn't even be here.
Yeah. If you let me tie you up, what do you expect me to not rape you?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like that's victim blamey as fuck. Like that's insane. But again,
that's sick.
Goes back to the thing that we were talking about where you go. When I said there's value in interviewing people like this, and you went no, because they could just be lying. Obviously, that's a lie.
I'm not saying 100% like it's disregarding. Like, I'm not saying like, no, that's bullshit.
But you just got to know what to sift through.
Yeah.
When they start praising themselves and start trying to like obfuscate responsibility by saying stuff like, well, it was their fault. Like, they let me tie them up. That's one thing. But when he starts talking about his childhood and things that were out of his control, traumatic things. That's the kind of stuff where there's value in it.
Yeah.
So after confessing to 23 murders On September 23rd of 2008, Dominique was found guilty of murdering and raping at least 23 men and boys. He was sentenced to 8 life terms without parole, and he avoided the death penalty by pleading guilty to all charges, probably a stipulation of him confessing to all the crimes. He is currently being held at the Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angles, Louisiana. And yeah, that was the story of Ronald Dominique. Again, saying Dominique that many times may have thrown people off. This was a white man.
White man.
This was a Caucasian man whose victims were mostly people of color. And it's really sad how long he was able to get away with it. And it really speaks to the plight of people struggling with mental health, addiction, being unhoused, how they are just this very vulnerable sect of the country.
Absolutely.
Who yeah. people don't care about because of the stigmas around them. Sex workers as well. And I think that we need to work on ourselves as a society to deprogram ourselves to look through these people. You know, I think that we have a tendency to look through these people. And then when you see them as a victim, you go, oh, well, you know, that's what happens to those people. Like, they're out there living that life, and that's what happens to you. So I think that it's going to take a lot of work, but we need to find a way to deprogram ourselves and also do something about it. We need a lot of infrastructural help as a nation, but we also yeah. need speaking some empathy. Of
that, yeah, there's a TikTok page.
Oh, a guy who not for long.
Who interviews, like, these young people who got caught on drugs, and he like interviews them on the street. He'll go check on them, come back or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But like, these are like young, still have potential young kids who like
yeah.
got on drugs, and just like, you see the like the progress of them taking the drug and what it's doing to their body and brain, where it's like, they sound super intelligent,
uh-huh.
but it's just, it's wrapped around just the drugs they've been using, the drug use. And it's like, it's so sad. And like, oh yeah, I'm 18. I've been out here since, you know, whatever our age. And it's like, I'm just out living the streets. But I mean, like, it's so sad to see like that young caught on drugs and just living in the streets. It's like, it's sad, man.
So it's a tough journey. And then to have somebody out there like hunting you and trying to take advantage of that is another element on top of it. It's insane. But yeah, that was the story of Ronald Dominique, man. Fran, before we get out of here, do you have any recommendations to the people? You watch anything good lately? Heard anything good lately? Anything?
No, I recently started watching Baby Reindeer, so I watched that.
Sure.
And the lady that plays the stalker.
Yes.
Jessica, what is it? Jessica Gunning, her name is. Uh-huh. She's in a show that I like called The Outlaws that I brought up a while ago.
Mm.
And that's that's with Christopher Walken in it. And
Christopher Walken?
Yeah, he's in that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
Christopher Walken, yeah.
And she has the UK accent, but in the show, it sounds like she has an Irish accent in Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, it's an Irish accent.
I thought so.
Maybe
okay.
even Scottish. It's been a couple of days since I watched it. Irish at least.
Yeah, but it is good, though. It's crazy. But it does speak on, like you said, the perspective from a guy, but also like, him being the guy, he's like, in the beginning, was like, what kind of like?
She's harmless. Yeah, like all of that stuff that we that I've said before, where I go, you know, if a woman was aggressively pursuing me at a club, I wouldn't think anything of it because I know that she can't do X, Y, and Z to me.
Yeah.
But then he also was in a dark place in his life and he enjoyed the attention. And so for all sure. these come, and then that starts to get explained as the show goes on, and you go from being like, man, you like this, and you don't go to the police.
I don't know about a dark place, but I see what you're saying.
What?
He was in a dark place?
Finish the show. Yeah, finish. What episode are you on?
I'm not sure.
Finish the show.
How many?
Your reaction to that tells me that you didn't finish.
I never said I finished it?
I'm saying, oh, I know you didn't,
don't
but your reaction
like
to what I just said tells me that you didn't. Even if you hadn't said it.
Right.
But, yeah, I think it's like 7 or 8 episodes. If you're not at least episode
like
6, then if you're...
I'm on like 3.
Yeah, you need to get to 6. But, yeah, like, initially you go, man, if you don't go to the police and tell you, you like that she likes you. But things progress. But anyway, fantastic show. I love Baby Reindeer. But, again, love is a weird word because I'll never watch it again. I really genuinely... I don't think I'll ever put that show on again because it's a hard watch. Mm. But... It is a, it's, I felt like it was a, an interesting perspective. I watched the movie, and I'm gonna, I don't know if this is a recommendation. I took a flight recently. I had some business to do. And I watched on the plane, I watched a movie called Men. It's an A24 movie. It's very, like a beautiful English countryside movie. And then it turns into, for the last like 25 minutes, just the most insane body horror movie I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if it was good or not, but it definitely was artistic. And then some of the shit I've never seen before. I don't know if I'll ever see it again in terms of body horror the last like 20 minutes or so. But I guess that's a recommendation. That's a movie I saw recently. It was Men. I also watched the first episode of Quiet on Set. You know, after like, I told myself I wasn't going to watch it because I just knew it would be like a hard watch. But my first takeaway from that first episode is, man, Amanda Bynes was so talented.
Yeah.
And if Dan Schneider had anything to do with snuffing out that light in that girl, he deserves only the worst things in life. Amanda Bynes was so naturally talented and naturally funny in a time where, like, women weren't getting their own shows. You know, this kind of stuff that you just, you kind of know you lived through and enjoyed and watched and everything, but you don't think about how monumental it is until somebody kind of lays it out for you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think about Amanda Bynes being a girl or the first girl to have a Nickelodeon, whatever. I didn't think about any of that. I just knew Amanda Bynes was funny as shit. The Amanda Show was funny. And that's it. I didn't even think about her being a girl, because it wasn't like, oh, she's a girl comedian. She just was funny naturally, so quick in characters. And to find out that, you know, because I'd known for years about a lot of the Dan Schneider stuff. I feel like if you go back to some old episodes, I might have hinted at it or talked about it or some YouTube documentaries or whatever. But when they lay it out in this Quiet on Set one, you go, wow, man, they let that guy get away with a lot of stuff, and his team and the industry itself of child actors and the way that they manipulate the parents and everything. It's just a dark scene, man. I don't know if I recommend it, but I only watched one episode, but it was a lot. And that was my biggest takeaway was, man, that was such a talented little girl. And I think it's tragic if the industry or that man had anything to do with, like, making her lose her way or her mind or any of that kind of stuff. Same with Orlando Brown, another guy, super talented guy. Just seems like he lost his mind. And I don't know if that's because of the industry.
He definitely lost his mind.
Huh?
He definitely lost his mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Schaps, Boo Squaps and all this. He's just out here saying the craziest stuff. And I feel empathy for him, but they keep interviewing him. People keep putting the microphone in front of his face and like, what are you going to say crazy next? And he doesn't let them.
I don't know, man. He doesn't disappoint. It's like, some of it is like, he may have lost, but some of it is like a bit. Because I seen a video, like, somebody called him walking down the street. He was like, what's up? Can you take me down to the store? I'm going to hop in the car with you. And it was like, he was just a regular dude. He just wanted to go get some smokes and was like, take me down the street. And that was it. But all the other shit was like, I was like, nah, this dude is... Yes. He's making his little run right now.
Yeah, we'll never fully know what the hell is going on with Orlando Brown. But yeah, man. So those are a couple of recommendations from us. Baby Reindeer, if you haven't checked it out yet. Men, I guess I'm recommending that. And Quiet on Set. I watched the first episode of it and I enjoyed it. And as always, there's a whole slew of new episodes of My 600-Pound Life on Max right now. So I'm kind of making my way through.
I don't have Max right now. I got too much shit going on. Some stuff I got, like, I want this, so I got to take one. Something got to go.
Respect.
I can't have.
Respect. Listen, I appreciate your self-control. I struggle with my own addictions as well. I'm a streamy. You know,
You are that, for sure.
Yeah, so they got me by the stranglehold, and I want to be strong, friend. I really do, but it's hard. It really is, man.
It's not, but sure.
No, it is, because, like, then, you know, not, when you go, I don't need Paramount Plus, then you see a trailer for Knuckles.
Maybe for you it is. For you it is. I'm not into TV. Knuckles, like you're talking about, like Sonic?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't watch TV like you, so maybe for you is a bit different. I don't need this. If Martin is not on it, or Always Sunny, I don't need it.
Yeah. So every time I say I don't need something, I see a trailer for something, I go, psh.
Whatever has Martin,
I'll give it another month.
Always Sunny, Workaholics, Office, all on them. That's the one I need.
That's bouncing around, though. Sometimes that jumps from one streaming platform to another.
Yeah, for sure. And those are the ones I'll get.
You dance right along with them.
I don't need, I keep them all. I don't need Paramount Plus. What's on that?
Call me Ash Ketchum. Turn my hat backwards and I throw my credit card. Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Hulu with all the fixins.
Yeah.
My credit card, Tubi. And Tubi's free.
Is it?
Now, Tubi,
well, you're on Tubi, though.
Tubi Premium. Or my credit card.
But you're on there, though.
Now that's TV.
You got a reason to have it, though.
Hmm?
You got a reason to have it. You can go in there and check. I'm watching me on here. And then, you know.
You said it. I didn't. But anyway.
Let's go.
This has been another episode of Affirmative Murder, the Equal Opportunity True Crime Comedy Podcast. I've been Alvin Williams, joined as always by my partner, True Crime Francis Evans, and we'll see you guys next week.
Deuces. Oh, next week's our last show before the...
Next week is our last show before the live show. Yeah. Our last show before the live show, May 4th. See you there or see you another time, maybe, possibly. I don't know. Bye.